Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Welcome to the Yahoo Sports NFL Podcast. I'm Yahoo senior NFL writer, Therese Paler. Here, my main man and fellow senior NFL writer, Charles Robinson. And Charles, Russell Okun is converting half his $13 million salary this year to Bitcoin. Charles, you were on this early because you started taking your full salary in Bitcoin years ago, right?
Yeah, right. I wish I would have. I've been an avid follower of Bitcoin, never an investor. And I wish Russell the best, because I can only tell you Bitcoin is very inflated right now and it seems more stable than ever. But you want to talk about being able to take half your salary and turn it into a quarter of your salary or triple your salary. Go ahead. You can take your shot. Hey, Bitcoin is there for you.
Go ahead and shoot your shot, Russ. I don't know. If there are a lot of people in the position to do that. So, right, Charles? I mean, look, people just trying to get by right now. So if you got that kind of advantage, good for you. But that was a pretty wild story.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's interesting because I always think it's interesting when athletes become a vehicle for lack of a better term, mainstreamization of anything. And I think it's been interesting because, you know, Bitcoin has been trying to become adopted pretty much everywhere, you know, move further into the mainstream. And it's done a great job of that. And it's on the ticker on CNBC now. And it's clearly a recognized currency. There's no doubt about that. But I think this is another step in taking it to the masses who may not necessarily be a part of that kind of an investment or, you know, look at Bitcoin as being a currency. And athletes are easily leveraged into a whole new audience. It's wild that I'm surprised he's the first guy, really, because yeah, it's been around long enough that I would have thought somebody would have thought this up first.
That story definitely generated a few clicks, some eyeballs. Here's another one that generated some eyeballs. Dwayne Haskins, quarterback for Washington's football team, former now, was released by the team on Monday, a full year faster than Jamarcus Russell was released by the Oakland Raiders. And if that doesn't tell you the degree to which that this failed, nothing else does, right? And there's a lot of interesting aspects of this that we're going to definitely get to. But let's talk about the player right now. Charles, I wrote a column on this on Monday saying basically at this point, when you're a first-round quarterback and this happens to you and you bust out like this and the team that drafts you, even though everyone knows it's a dysfunctional franchise, gets rid of you after 2 years, after 1 year, now it's on you to fix it. Mm-hmm. There's no excuses. He has to look from within himself and find the strength to overcome that bust label, because it is one of the hardest labels to overcome in sports. First round pick bust. It's hard. You need to land in a good situation, a place where they believe in you and a place they can develop you. And that's not just quarterbacks. That's any position. And most importantly, you also need to win to salvage that. And you got to do all the right things too, Charles. My take on it is, if he wants to play in 2021, there should be opportunities, because we've seen quarterbacks who bust out, they typically land a few more spots. Like what Josh Rosen's on his fourth team, right? Like you'll get a few more shots, but if you're going to do that, there's some things you better do as a backup waiting for his chance. And what are they, C?
Well, listen, I mean, first and foremost, you're going to have to outwork everybody, like, period.
Yep.
Like you don't,
period.
That is the number one thing. If a quarterback in this situation, you know, we've seen Johnny Manziel. I mean, Cleveland's done a couple, you know, Brandon Weeden and Johnny Manziel in quick order. We've seen other first, you know, you talked about Josh Rosen, and the first thing that any team wants to see from a guy after something like this happens, they don't want to hear any excuses. They don't want to hear.
They don't care.
Yeah.
They don't want any of it.
Don't care about whether you got your shot or whatever. You're coming in and what they're going to say is, okay, here's the deal. Fresh slate. This is it. Fresh slate. Now it's incumbent upon you to pull yourself up. And what that means is you're going to outwork everybody. You're going to outwork guys in the classroom. You're going to outwork them on the field. You're going to, you know, pick the brains of veterans. You're going to do every single thing you need to do to not sit there and say, well, I feel like I should be the starter. Not think that you earned that by being a first round pick. You come in and basically you do every single thing to prove without words that you are the guy that they should now cast their lot on, that they're going to give you, the opportunity. Means?
Because now this means what? Now you got to go the long way to be a starter in this league. Right.
Yep.
There's no fast way now.
Yep.
There's no team saying, hey, you're going to be our guy. No, no, no. You're coming the long way. And guess what? The long way can be pretty lucrative, okay? Like Chase Daniels made like $40 million in his career by just being a good backup, a guy that's good for the room, and a guy that does what else? Help the starter. One of our favorite conversations in this podcast, Charles, is like, when we try to figure out where quarterbacks can go, we wonder, who do they have at the quarterback position already? How invested are they in that guy? And are they trying to bring in someone to undercut that guy?
Right.
Like, this isn't Madden. You don't just stack talent. You're looking for, like, relationships. So if he goes somewhere, even if he went to a place with a veteran quarterback and a veteran team and a veteran coach, he's still going to have to put in the work that the starter's putting in, and it can't be a question. Like, you got to go to war to help that guy. You're still competing. You're trying to get better. And you're not just helping the quarterback, are you? You're probably going to be the scout team quarterback too.
Right.
Which means you got to study the other offenses and execute those to help your defense. We saw Teddy Bridgewater take the long way back from his injury, didn't we?
Yes.
Teddy Bridgewater took the long way. You can take the long way. And you can emerge from the pit. He's in the football pit right now. You can fight your way out of it. But you better find that internal fortitude to get there. He's really, really talented. I hope he finds it. But I think we agree at this point, no one cares about the situation. Nobody cares about none of that. Now, you want to save your career? To quote my favorite moment from The Wire, that is on you.
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah. No, Bridgewater is a perfect example because I think, you know, people forget about Bridgewater. This was a guy who, after he departed Minnesota, went through the Jets organization, did enough that I think he thought, hey, maybe I'm going to get a shot in free agency. Somebody's going to be interested in me. And what ultimately happened was he had to find another backup situation that suited him, someone who he thought believed in him, someone who he thought could teach him. But you said the key point there. He went to New Orleans ready to work hard, as hard as possible.
He worked his ass off.
But not to undercut Drew, but to support Drew, to help Drew go to war. And you know that work ethic and his ability.
Teammates, Charles.
Yeah.
Those defensive guys really appreciated the work he put in to compete on his scout team day.
Yeah.
He appreciated Cam Jordan, really appreciative of that guy, you know? Like, that matters. That's how you win a room.
He did. As a backup, he won over a lot of that team. And then when his opportunity came, he went out and performed. He said, hey, I'm here. I'm going to do it. I'm going to ball out. And when Drew comes back, hey, he comes back, but I'm going to maximize my shot. And that's what earned Teddy Bridgewater the eye of, guess what? Joe Brady. Joe Brady ends up in Carolina. That becomes the conversation with David Tepper and Matt Rhule, and bingo, he becomes, you know, another starting quarterback. It was the long way back. He had to go through a couple of organizations to get there, but he managed to do it, and he didn't sit there talking about the knee injury or, hey, you know, I didn't really get the shot I should have because I did perform in New York, you know, in limited opportunities, all these different things. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Haskins now. And what I think is really interesting is now this is – it's also generating a larger conversation about Dwayne Haskins, which is natural that it was going to happen because you don't see a guy who gets cut, as you said, this quickly. And by the way, not only did he get cut this quickly, but remember, the first coaching staff in Washington lost faith in him, okay? And people can argue whether they wanted him or not, and it was just the owner's pick or whatever, but that's one. Then the second coaching staff, Ron Rivera, went and got Kyle Allen pretty quickly, which was the first. You and I talked about that right away. We're like, yo, red flag.
Yeah.
Big red flag there. So that's two coaching staffs that, you know, burned out pretty quickly on the guy. And remember, the second coaching staff had to convince the owner, if it was the owner's pick, hey, we're just going to, it's time. It's time to move on from this guy. When they don't have, you know, look, all due respect to Alex Smith, I don't think there's a quarterback on that roster where you're like, that's the long-term guy for us. They don't have that.
No, yeah, there's no doubt. You know, here's something else he's going to have to contend with now, too. Just reported he went unclaimed on waivers.
Yep.
So this long way's coming now, and it's up to him to dig himself out. I like the fact that you mentioned, you know, we're getting like a larger discussion about it. Some of it is immensely frustrating. And one of the talking points that's generated some attention was Booker McFarland, who in the aftermath of Dwayne Haskins' release equated it essentially with an opportunity to say that this isn't the first time we've seen this happen and it won't be the last. He said it bothers him because a lot of it is the young African-American player. They come in and don't take this as a business. And then he cited Jamarcus Russell. But that take is immensely problematic for many, many reasons. And I thought our colleague, Shalice Manza-Young, who I'm telling you guys is fantastic, I let her column on it just nuked it. I thought she nuked this. 100% right down, you know, 400-yard drive right down the middle. Haskins' stumble shouldn't be hailed against any other player, particularly black quarterbacks, okay? He failed, and that's his failure to live with. But there are a lot of players in this league, Charles, that I think I want to unleash you to make a moment here, but there are a lot of players, a lot of them, who understand that this is about building a brand as well. You have to use football the way football uses you. There's nothing wrong with that. That's okay, but you have to work hard. You better take care of business if you do that.
Right.
But I'm not here for like the demonization of players looking out for their long-term interests and their pocketbooks when like that's how you make it in life in today's world. Like the days to just put your head down. I mean, you can do it, but if you can do that and create the brand and be a reliable football player for your team, why wouldn't you do it? That was frustrating. And also the conflating of this being like a black player thing was what was really, really frustrating.
Right.
Because there were a lot of quarterbacks that flamed out for the same reason that we feared Dwayne Haskins might. Johnny Manziel, Brian Leaf, Paxton Lynch, Jake Locker, but we don't equate that with the white quarterback.
Right.
It's a ridiculous notion. It's a generational thing.
Right. I think, you know, Booger made it a racial thing. And as you said, it's generational. So the he missed the strike zone on it. And I think what's interesting here is, and maybe fans we probably see it because we're a little closer to it and we span a longer period of time, but you have executives, analysts, coaches, individuals running teams, owners, people of a certain age who, and I'm sure Booger McFarland equated his experience as a black player coming up through the NFL.
Right.
And so that's why he focuses in on black players. But what he lost in that is that this is all players now. Like they've grown up in a different generation than Booger did or anyone else. And that is the generation of social media. Of you grow up as a kid in your own social media bubble, on Instagram, you're on Twitter, you know, Snapchat. Now there's TikTok. There's all these different things. And these are guys who grew up at the center of their own social media universe as everybody else does. My nephew
right.
has his own social, you know, like
right.
every kid does. And so when they make it to the NFL, they survive in their space differently than people did 20 years ago. It was harder to be Deion Sanders and be on an MC Hammer video. Okay, you had to be, it was
pretty
really
badass.
Hard. Yeah, you had to, it was hard, okay? Like, but it's not as hard
now. You better back it up.
But it's not as hard now to make yourself the center of a social media universe. And as you said, Johnny Manziel, there were other guys who have done this who were not black players who flamed out. And we weren't automatically like, oh, it's all on this. But
no,
and another thing too, let's not forget TB12, Tom Brady, biggest
right.
brand. Hey, Tom,
the greatest
Tom
quarterback of all time.
Tom versus
has a brand
time. Tom versus
and a
time.
Book.
And his own
and a book
documentary
too.
Series on Facebook.
And his
and
own products.
Now, and here's the thing that's funny about Tom. Didn't always go well inside that organization. You know, Bill didn't like that Tom had his own doctors, his own idea of health and fitness regimens that was rubbing off on other teammates. I don't think not everybody in the Patriots organization was psyched about that. But the difference was, and this is where it cuts both ways for athletes nowadays, particularly young guys, Tom did a lot of Like he won a lot of stuff. And so, you know, when his failures came, you kind of were like, well, you got to kind of balance it out. If young guys now fail quickly in the league, the older generation or people who are not connected to that sort of bubble of social media, the first thing they're going to look at is go, man, he was always in his social media. Like he was always this or he was always that. That's one of those things that automatically becomes a problem.
Oh, man, bro. Like, so here's the thing, too. Like, don't think Patrick Mahomes didn't have opportunities for stuff his rookie year. When you become the Chiefs' first round quarterback in like 30 something years, like there are all kinds of sponsorship opportunities brought to you. Did you hear a peep from him? Did you see his logo?
Right.
Like, no. And that's like kind of the underrated part of this too. You can start doing a lot of that stuff when you've established yourself as a good player. And like, that's kind of the key there. It's the timing of it. And honestly, it really comes, like, honestly, Charles, it does come down. Like, are you good or not?
Yeah.
Because if you fail, like, guys are going to reach back into a whole bunch of stuff and say, oh, that's why. Oh, that. Well, you just don't play good football good enough. That's really what it comes down to.
Yep.
Like, let's focus on that part of it, right? So one more thing I wanted to add, too. The part about players and having their brand and stuff, like, I realized, like, why the Juju Smith-Schuster thing didn't, like, sit right with me. And it's kind of a selfish thing, but, you know, as reporters, we want players to show, like, their personality a little bit, right? And I've had a chance to talk to that guy. He's a very personable, fun guy to talk to. And quite frankly, these guys are told more than ever by teams, hey, you know, button it up. You don't really get to see who these guys are anymore. Like, Charles, you've been covering the league a long time, right? Like, I don't know about you, but older reporters always say, man, you should have covered this league in 94. You could go get whoever you need. You could go get whoever you want. And now things are pretty locked down to the point where I'm just pretty kind of grateful to hear like players be who they are and have some fun and show their personality. So I don't like it when that gets attacked and people who are ordinarily, and again, I know this is selfish, but like people who are ordinarily pretty outgoing and you can kind of see who they are, which I appreciate that. Guess what? They're not going to do that anymore. Like, that's what turns these guys against showing who they are, which hurts us as reporters, but also hurts you from the fan from truly connecting with them as individuals. Like, that literally just hit me, man. But, like, that's why that whole deal didn't sit. Because I'm like, man, here's a dude that's having fun, that's trying to, and it's like, I bet you he's going to end up emerging from this experience a little different. And just from that point of view, as someone who has to cover these guys, I think that kind of sucks.
Well, you know, listen. It's a W league. And when I say it's a W league, I don't mean wins. I mean, it's a Y league. When you don't win, people instantaneously start to ask why. And when they start to ask why, they look at everything. And anything you're
that's
doing.
That's the rule.
Listen, 5 minutes ago, 5 minutes ago, we were all pissed off. Well, I'm not me personally, but there were people pissed off on Twitter about Baker Mayfield being on every commercial. Oh, Baker's on all these commercials. And maybe if he played, maybe instead of doing commercials,
get in the film room, Baker.
He's shirtless, leaning against the car. Oh, we recreated the Brett Favre. You know, it was everything about Baker. And then all of a sudden this season, hey, I don't know. Maybe that's not such a big problem. It is a W league. If you get the W's in the standings, people stop asking about the W's off the field, which is the why. Why are you not doing this? Why are you not doing that? Why are your stats like this? Why are the wins like this? It's as simple as that. And if Haskins had been successful, wouldn't have given a shit about any of this. That's it. So like you said, take the long route, come back, work hard, be successful, be there for another quarterback, earn your way back into it, and you can come back from this. It has happened. Yeah, and it's good. I'm glad we spent some time talking about Haskins because there's been a lot of quarterback focus, particularly in the last couple of weeks. Now, all of a sudden, we're talking about Jared Goff. Trez wrote a great piece on Jared Goff, leaning on some of the things that we had talked about on the podcast about, like, hey, man, you know.
We need more. We need more from this guy,
particularly in this quarterback era. And I think what's interesting is I wrote earlier in the season about this idea that teams are pausing or thinking about pausing this idea of just automatically signing guys after 3 years. Like, maybe we don't need to sign these guys after 3 years. And people have all of a sudden noticed, hey, you know, Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, those teams waited. They were like, we're not just going to give these guys the money after 3 years. We're going to wait and see for sure. And then those guys ended up being released by their teams. And the year later, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, they got it after year three. And now it's looking like, well, geez, is this the debacle? You know, are both of these guys not going to live up to this contract? Do they both have to be offloaded at some point? I think this raises a really good question about, given what you and I have talked about, the level of quarterbacks rising in this league. There's a lot more talented guys out there. Maybe this pedal to the metal, lock your guy down as soon as possible mentality. Maybe that's not the great. And I think about Mayfield. I think about Baker Mayfield. Three fumbles last week. And I'm like, maybe you wait until year four to make sure about this.
Great. Let's talk about it. So we also have to mention the reason teams are rushing to do it for 3 years, that the price only goes higher on quarterbacks when you end up having to pay.
Unless they're bad.
That's why there's a...
Unless they're terrible, then the price goes lower.
Right. So that's the reason why there is a rush to pay after three. Like, you don't want to end up playing the Kirk Cousins salary cap game.
The Dak.
Like,
you don't, Dak Prescott.
Yeah, you don't want to... Right. So here's the deal. There's three quarterbacks here we need to probably talk about. Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, and Lamar Jackson. I think if I'm Buffalo, I'm pretty comfortable paying Josh Allen. I don't want him to have his MVP season, but I want him to have that after he got his money. Okay.
I agree.
I feel pretty comfortable. And this is Therese talk. I talked to Josh Allen. Who knows what you can tell in a pair of 30-minute conversation, but that dude loves football. All right. And I think the way his teammates respond to him, you can kind of see it. I'm reasonably comfortable. He's going to keep trying to get better because he loves the game. And anyone with enough confidence to be willing to have a throw off with Patrick Mahomes, I'm in. I'm great. So, yes, that and obviously the season he's had, no debate there. Josh Allen's good. I think you pay him, right?
Yep, with you.
Baker's interesting in the sense that there's definitely a case that he's a product of the system. They've got one of the league's best rushing attacks, a tremendous offensive line. And while they lost Odell Beckham Jr., there are some weapons out there. Jarvis Landry's been good for them. Donovan Peoples-Jones, I know he didn't play last weekend, but he's contributed to those guys. I even picked him up in Super League because I'm like, ugh. So there's a case to be made here, especially after the way Kirk Cousins played under Stefanski in that system. I don't know. The one thing about Baker that might throw a wrench into the waiting thing is that he's not just competitive, Charles. He's combative competitive. And we see it when times go bad with him. But you even see it a little bit, when things, there's edge to Baker Mayfield, which I think we both appreciate from a quarterback. But I guess the only fear is if you don't pay him and you make that guy sing for his supper, I'm not sure he's capable of making you pay. But if he is, he's gonna. Because he's gonna take it personal. Where do you come out on it? Because I don't think that's an easy decision for them.
He's a list maker in his head, for sure.
Oh, yes.
he keeps a list of who he thinks said. Wronged him.
And if you're Andrew Berry, do you want to be on the list of people that Baker Mayfield feels wronged him? I don't know. I just think, I don't know. It's where are you at on it?
I'd do it. I'd wait. I mean, I'd risk it. And here's why.
Charles likes conflict, people.
I mean, I don't mind conflict if it's, I think of it more as dynamic tension. I think of it as Andrew Berry looking at Baker Mayfield and the team and saying to himself, and I would even convey it to Baker, look, man, I am responsible for this team for the next 10 years, 20 years. However, I'm a young guy, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm in my early 30s. I might be here for 30 years, okay? I am here for the long haul. I got to think about everything. And if you want to take this as a slight, that I want to wait an extra year, that's fine. Go blow it out. There's no problem with that. And I will be happy to pay you. But right now, we are in the early stages of my planning. We are in the early stages of what I want to do. And this is something that, frankly, I'm going to wait a year on. And you can take that however you want. But while you're angry, Baker, I'm going to go out and make your offensive line better. Yep. I'm going to go out and make the skill positions around you better. I'm going to make that opposing defense better so you get the ball back more often. And all I'm asking for you is continue to take the strides, eliminate the turnovers, because I would say that's probably the one thing they're probably most concerned about. Don't turn the ball over, because if you turn the ball over, you're going to lose ball games. And if Baker takes that as a slight, that's fine. But here's the thing about Baker that I don't think a lot of people understand. He is, as you said, he is combative. However, I think if he feels like if you are operating on a plane of respect, if you approach him as a man and you say, here's my thinking, let's sit down and talk
that
about this.
That rings true with me. That rings
I think he buys into that. And I think that's a hurdle.
But
that
you
Andrew
still
Berry,
ending up on that list. There ain't no doubt about it.
Yeah, but I think you can get off. I think you can get off that. You buy your way off
the list.
Just buy off it. Buy your way off. You know what?
If you can get off the list, okay.
Yeah, if he does what he has to do, you pay to get off the list, and you do it happily because you got your guy, right? But
see, I
real quick, though, I want to say something here. I am with you on Allen, and I think Baker. So we're going to go through all three of these quarterbacks. I am a yes on Allen because I've seen him take a step every single year. As you said, I think there's an MVP here in his future, and I'd like to do it before that. I think he is dynamic. I think he's leaning into where quarterbacks are going. I think all the best things that could happen with him have happened, which is great. Mm-hmm. I probably question what's going to happen without Brian Daboll, his offensive coordinator, when he leaves, you know, but you factor that in. Baker, I'm a no. I say wait for it one more year because there's been too much of a roller coaster here. It's got to even out and help him achieve that. And, I'll let you weigh in on Lamar Jackson because I think that's the really super interesting one that is – it requires a lot of thought and a lot of planning, and I did not think it would at this point.
I know. I agree. The year hasn't progressed the way you thought it would with that guy, right? But one more thing about Baker before we move on. I think there's an interesting dynamic here in that if you're Andrew Berry, you have to covertly ask Stefanski – what this guy's ceiling is.
Sure.
But you need to give Stefanski cover by just saying, so he can tell Baker, this is not, you know, hey, this isn't on me. Like that's
it's got to be upstairs. Decision.
But covertly, Andrew Berry has to at least, what can this guy, what's his ceiling? Because if he's like, I'm totally in on Baker, like I think this guy's going to be a great quarterback in this league. You should sign him, then I'd do it. But like, there's a reason I keep saying, ask the coach. Because he's the one that's got to get it out of him. And he needs to have some skin in that game, too. But there's like a tricky part of that, though, where, like, the player kind of can't know. Like, the coach needs, like, to be able to use the GM as a shield, too. It's tricky. But good teams can kind of work this.
Here's the problem with that, though, if you're a general manager. If you ask the coach, and the coach says, yeah, absolutely, and then it doesn't work out, that's divorce. That's a coach GM divorce because at some point people like you and me, we come asking. We're like, we ask people in the organization. Now, wait a minute. When they paid him, whose decision was that? Who was driving the bus on that? How did that go down? And then someone says to Therese, hey, man, you know, that wasn't really Andrew Berry's decision. That was the Kevin Stefanski. And then it gets written. And then here we go.
But see, rats flee sinking ships. So like that's how that ends up happening. But if you're a good organization, like, it's going to end up being an organizational decision. And that's why we always talked about the importance of making sure the coach and GM are like that, you know,
sure,
that they're together so that it reduces the chances of that happening. But I love the fact Charles brought it up because Lord knows we've been in enough places where we've seen, whenever you start hearing that, by the way, that's when you know that team's probably not winning this year. Like, when people are, like, doing that type of stuff to each other, there's a lot of pressure on them, one. And number two, they might get out of it, but that death cycle's probably already started. Fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
All right, so Lamar, complicated. Hasn't taken a step forward this year. Offensive line hasn't been nearly as good this year. MVP, though. And that's going to be a difficult discussion because now you're talking about, all right, where does he slot in salary-wise? Like, you can make a case. I'm an MVP. So was Patrick Mahomes. Season didn't go the way we want. We're going to make the playoffs, though. Win a playoff game. You know, I think he has a case to ask for a whole lot of money. He does. But if you're Baltimore, you're saying, okay, the offense certainly hasn't improved this year. Some of that's on us. The offensive line just, which is a key part to making that offense work, is just not as good. But you got to make a decision here on what you're going to do. I think that one's extremely complicated. I think as an organization, you figure out, okay, where can we slot this guy? Where are we comfortable paying him now, right? And you figure out where that is, and you try to see if you can get there with him. And if you can't, and he has to come and play for his money and sing for his supper too, and Greg Roman's still the offensive coordinator, and James Urban's still the quarterback coach, there's a chance he bounces back next year, has a huge season, you have to blow him out. But that's a tricky one. And that is, to me, the trickiest of these three because that offense hasn't gotten better. But on the other hand, he's an MVP. And I also think because of his style, there's a chance he might want to get paid sooner rather than later because he's a running quarterback. You know, there might be some middle ground to be had here because I think he likes Baltimore. He always talks about his teammates in such a way that I don't think he sees himself other places. I actually kind of think there might be some room for middle ground here if he really wants to stay. But that's tricky. And that one certainly is going to be one to watch going forward. Where do you come out on it?
I think, like you said, it's going to be a complicated one. And I think that what bothers me a little bit about the Ravens situation is that I would have liked to seen them do what Buffalo did for Josh Allen.
Right.
Which was, hey,
they complicated their own evaluation.
They absolutely did. And, you know, Buffalo was like, hey, we think he needs a Cole Beasley. Like, they were like, how can we get his completion percentage up, but allow him to take shots down the field, you know, with his arm? You know, we're going to help him with the shorter stuff. Go get Cole Beasley. Next year, hey, he clearly needs a deeper piece. Let's go get Stephon Diggs. Like, they figured out the mechanics around him to help maximize what he was. I don't think Baltimore has completely done that with Lamar Jackson. And so I think, as you said, they did. They complicated their own evaluation by not necessarily adding everything that could have helped him to maximize what he is. Now, it is, I'll tell you, when I hit my wall in this one was when I was doing that story on the three-year extensions, extensions after 3 years, and I was talking to an evaluator, and he said to me, and I was so flat-footed, I literally was speechless when he said this to me because I didn't expect to be in such a quandary over it. But he said to me, let me ask you something. If you had both of them right now after year three and you had to sign one to the $40 million extension, would you sign Lamar or Deshaun Watson? And I was like,
that one's tough.
Whoa. Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. That was, I sat there and I'm like, oh, shit. You know what? And I had to think about it. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I think I have to think about this now. And now after seeing this entirety of the season,
I think it's Deshaun, bro.
I would sign Deshaun to that deal.
Like, you know, I love Lamar.
I do too.
I know you do too. But it's like, the issue is that, like, you already know that Deshaun has, like, he has the magic of when you need, like, chunk gains through the air, he might get them for you. Like, he's that kind of guy that, and yeah, he takes too many sacks, but that didn't stop Ben Roethlisberger from winning a Super Bowl or a couple, right? Like, you can win with that. The problem is, like, we're still kind of waiting for Lamar to, like, win with his arm in the playoffs. And I actually don't think that that's a question for Deshaun Watson. His biggest issue has been coaching and his supporting cast, the team around him. So as much as it sucks to say, I'm pretty comfortable paying Deshaun Watson. And I'd pay Lamar, too, but I think that one's a more complicated eval. And I totally understand where you were caught flat-footed. That's a tough question.
And the thing that got me over the hump on it over the course of the year, I literally couldn't answer it then. But now that we've had the totality of the season, I think what I really like about Deshaun is that I know that no matter what, like, he has been in brutal situation after brutal situation, figured out a way to either progress his game or to be productive or to bounce back or to, he keeps getting up over and over. When he lost Hop this year, when he lost DeAndre Hopkins, I was like, I don't know what's going to happen with this guy.
He still made the Pro Bowl.
Like, with a great season. And so
that dude's a boss, man.
I think it made me feel like, okay, what is holding me back with Lamar is he's lost all these pieces this year. And it left me wondering, okay, maybe the build is just as important as the contract for him as well. Like, hey, you know, Ronnie Stanley being there is important. Losing Marshall Yanda was important. You know, having Hollywood Brown dropping passes and not taking that step was important. Not picking up a wide receiver at the trade deadline was important. You know, all these different things.
Receiver. He needs a dude, man. He needs a number one guy. That would really, really help him. I think Charles and I are still in on Lamar. We just think that we're at this point where, you know, if you're Baltimore, there are absolutely some things you got to attack aggressively this offseason to help this guy and to help your evaluation, too. And that's fair.
Identify your Stephon Diggs, because had they went and gotten Stephon Diggs, I can't even imagine what Baltimore's offense would look like.
And I could, we've both talked to Stephon. I could see him liking Lamar, and I could see him liking, you know, I could see that he'd need his targets now.
Okay? Yeah, of course.
Like, And he's gotten them in Buffalo. And I think watching Diggs, by the way, do what he did in Buffalo this year, it's a reminder that guys are competitors. And sometimes when they just want more targets, it's because they know what they're capable of and they want a chance to compete. Like, they want a chance to show the world what they're capable of. And if they love the game of football, that's not a bad thing.
When you and I talked to him, you're right. I did like him. I like his personality. But he proved everything that was kind of spun as a negative while he was in Minnesota actually was, you're right, it was wrong. Like, it was wrong. We perceived it wrong. I agree with you. I think he knew what he was capable of. I think he knew I can be a top three or four receiver in this game easily. And I think he really knew that. And then, you know, he went to Buffalo. He got his opportunity to show that. And he's done nothing but been a brilliant player. So I have immense respect for him.
Immediately, like, took to Josh Allen and vice versa. Like, Josh loves the guy. Just like, you know, sometimes these guys just want to show the world what they can do. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. Charles, speaking of showing the world what they can do, big weekend for the NFC least. Listen, Washington is 6-9, can clinch a playoff berth by beating Philly at 4-9-1 this week. This will be their first playoff berth and division title since 2015. You know, let's just start with this game really quickly. First of all, it's going to matter, you know, who plays quarterback here. I think Taylor Heineke kind of opened a few eyeballs. You mentioned that on the pod with some of the throws he was making. There are some little darts being thrown late in that game last week. But obviously, they'd rather have Alex Smith go.
Yeah.
If you're Washington, though, I think winning this game and obviously winning this division will be a huge deal, given the dysfunction in that franchise. Because no one had a worse summer than Washington. And we're not going to revisit all that. They are by far the leaders in the clubhouse of Therese and Charles size that we have to talk about these again.
Wait. Worst summer, worst fall, worst December. Like, it was just never ending. Like, it. Oh, and by the way, the whole time the coach has been fighting cancer.
I know.
Like, it's unreal. You got the coach who's fighting cancer. You got the quarterback who literally is coming back from one of the most catastrophic leg injuries in the history of the NFL. The owner is constantly under fire, rightfully. Now you have the first round pick who's now waived. Yep. I mean, this is, good Lord.
Except for the way they play defense. That has been a revelation. These guys really, really, they're fun to watch defensively.
They are a lot of fun.
And it's hard not to draw that parallel between the 2014 Panthers, which set the stage for the Super Bowl qualifying team the next year. Now, I'm not saying Washington's going to the Super Bowl next year. I clearly don't think that. But I do think that everything they've been through and the way they've managed to, like, compete and put themselves in this position, yeah, like, the division sucks. Like, that division stinks. But I've appreciated the way they've competed, especially defensively, the way they've gotten contributions from, like, Cam Curl and Cole Holcomb. They got 4-5 pass rushers. Those guys are fun to watch defensively. And given what Ron Rivera is going through and everything that man has had to navigate, basically being a head football coach who's, like, in charge of the franchise,
yep,
you know, who has to deal with business stuff, I'm really, really impressed with the job that man has done this year.
Ron Rivera, you know, you go through these coaching cycles, and it was interesting because last year it was, I thought Ron and Mike McCarthy were both, Mike definitely a little bit more than Ron, but they were both, it was a little bit of the sort of retread. It's like, well, geez, man, Ron just got out of Carolina. They flamed out and, you know, they were in decline. So all of a sudden Ron just gets this job in Washington. And anybody who really understood the inner workings of Carolina was like, look, Ron wasn't the problem. Like, he's going to be fine. And he's shown that. And that defense is, as much as we talk about Chase Young, I'm like a personal favorite. I love watching Jonathan Allen. Like, he's nasty.
Isn't he great?
He's so much fun to watch.
Well, I like Montez Sweat. Like, we can go down the line here, guys, that are playing on that defense.
Yeah.
Like, there are guys that are balling out here, right?
Yeah. Oh, it's and it'll be fun to watch them in this game because I frankly believe Philadelphia, for me, there's a lot riding on this game, okay? There is a lot riding on because Jalen Hurts had two great games, okay? And now he had his wall game where it wasn't a catastrophe, but the turnovers really, really hurt him significantly. And so now it's how does he come back out of that and against a really good defense? And it's just germane to the league. As guys start to get their starts under their belt, teams get defensive film on them. They figure out what they can't do well. They corner them into doing the things they can't do well as quarterbacks. And Ron Rivera, very good at doing that. He's got the defense to do it. And seeing how Jalen Hurts responds to this is going to be extremely interesting, because I'm going to tell you, here's the storyline coming out of this. Jalen Hurts plays great game, you know, does well, flourishes. We go into an offseason where Carson Wentz is going to get dealt and blah, blah, blah. We move on. Maybe Doug Peterson, you know, goes out the door. Maybe they hire Lincoln Riley to coach Jalen Hurts. file that one away. But anyway, if Jalen Hurts hits another wall and is poor in this game and there's a problem, now creates the atmosphere of, I don't know, it looks to me like we got a Trubisky Carson Wentz. We got to get him back in the saddle and give him another shot before we make this decision. And it's just a whole different dynamic, I think, if Hurts really plays poorly in this game. It raises a million questions and changes the entire dynamic of that franchise. So remarkably, it's a really important game for both of these teams.
There are a couple interesting things about this as well. Well, first of all, if Doug ends up getting replaced by Lincoln Riley because he's a better fit with Jalen Hurts, the way Peterson was smiling when they drafted Jalen Hurts, I'll never forget it. And it's like, yep, well, that's the reason you're out. That'd be rough, number one. Number two, don't forget how bad Carson Wentz stunk the first time against Washington. It was a season opener. The Eagles lost 27-17. And I took notes on that game, and I was like, you know, Wentz doesn't look comfortable here. Slow to trigger, you know, slow to process, and threw two interceptions. Jalen Hurts balls out against a Washington team that's gotten better over the last 3 months. That's it. It's over. Like, this is a chance to draw a direct evaluation between these two quarterbacks against a great defense. So that's it. Like, this is time. This is actually a fascinating game on multiple levels, and one I'm sure both of us will be keeping a close eye on. How about this one, though? Still in the NFC East. The 6-9 Cowboys at the 5-10 Giants earlier in the day. Now, what about this? This is amazing, too. The Cowboys-Giants winner needs a Washington loss on Sunday night to clinch the NFC East and the number 4 seed in the NFC playoffs. The Giants can still make it. The Cowboys can. How crazy is this? That this is out here for both these teams, the type of seasons they've had. The Cowboys are seeking their second division title in 3 years, while the Giants would have their first playoff berth since 2016 and first division crown in a decade. This is another fascinating one, too, albeit one that's not nearly as fun as the next one. This one's going to be interesting to see. Like, hey, they'll both teams will draw up their best stuff. And if we've acknowledged that the Giants are at least well coached, I'm kind of interested to see what they pull out in this game, because I think they're going, this is the kitchen sink game for those guys.
That NFC East is such a used car lot, man. I swear to God, man. This is like, you know, they all drive, but they smell a little funny. Like,
Charles ain't buying that 08 Subaru, boy. He don't want it.
Yeah, you know, this has got some replacement parts, a little bit of Bondo everywhere. You know, you know, every single one of these teams is pretty hit up. And what's entertaining to me about this game is, you know, you kind of watch Cowboys Twitter and fans are, you know, some mild excitement. Like, hey, you know, we went through a horrific start. Defense is playing better. Who knows what could happen if we make the playoffs? Well, here's what's going to happen if we make the playoffs. Russell Wilson's going to happen. Drew Brees is going to happen. Tom Brady's going to happen. Aaron Rodgers is going to happen. It's a mess. Hey, you're going to have to face.
Hey, I know one thing. I know the team that these other teams you just mentioned don't want to face is Washington. I know that. They don't want to face that defensive front. They don't want that.
Right.
Give me any of these, but don't give me that defensive front. I don't want it.
And, you know, there's also the it's a double-edged sword for Dallas fans, too, because the Dallas defense is suddenly, it's played better the last few weeks, and Dallas plays well again defensively in this game. Say you go to the playoffs and you have a decent game defensively. All I know is Mike McCarthy is going to be a stan for Mike Nolan. He's going to say, we figured it out. Like, he's fine. And guess what? The coaching change. There aren't going to be any coaching changes. Just like Jerry, you know, has said, and Stephen Jones has said, we're sticking with Mike McCarthy. Well, they're probably going to stick with Mike Nolan too. So a lot riding for, at least for the Cowboys in particular, and I think even Mike Nolan, I think it's a lot harder to maybe make some of the changes you were sure you were going to make, you know, or you were probably going to make defensively if they have a good game, qualify for the playoffs, and somehow put up a fight against a good quarterback. But yeah, man, this is the NFC is, it's what a hit up division. And yet we're in the last game of the season, and it's weirdly kind of interesting to watch all these teams and be like, you know, I'm kind of drawn in to the mess a little bit to see which one of these is going to get pushed into the postseason.
Well said. So there's a couple other playoff scenarios I do think we should at least touch on, right? I'm going to run through these things. You sure. Tell me of these things what interests you the most. Let's start in the AFC, right? Where we got five teams shooting for four playoff spots.
Yep.
Right? Tennessee and Houston, where the Titans can cement their first division title since 2008. And Derrick Henry is 223 yards short of cracking 2,000 yards on the season. And he's facing the league's 30th-ranked run defense in terms of DVOA. So I think if you're Houston, this is one of those games where there's eight in the box. We might give up 400 yards passing, but you're not breaking that against us. Like, I don't care, you know. So this could actually be a big Ryan Tannehill game. Another one, Jacksonville at A&D, where the Colts can win the division with a win and a Titans loss or tie. And we'll lock up the first AFC title since 2014, right? So that's kind of interesting. Also, we've got Pittsburgh at Cleveland. We should probably take a minute to talk about this one. Did you know after Tampa clinches its spot last week, if Cleveland does, this would be the NFL would see its two longest active playoff droughts end in the same season for only the fourth time since the merger in 1970. Wow. So that's pretty cool, right? Last time happened, Charles, 1999. So this is actually a pretty interesting scenario for the Browns, who can clinch their first playoff berth since 2002, man. I'm really excited about that one, man. I think this is going to be a kitchen sink game for those guys, because that would go a long way toward validating what Barry and Stefanski want to do.
The Browns are excited. I was texting with somebody in the organization after Pittsburgh named Mason Rudolph the starter. And what was interesting to me was this person in the organization literally was like, it's the Mason Rudolph Myles Garrett rematch. And I'm like,
hilarious.
I probably don't want to, like, I mean, like, let's probably not promote that from within the franchise. let's try to forget that happened for you guys. But
God, that's so funny.
It's going to be if you're Cleveland, Pittsburgh's not tanking this game. And after listening to Mike Tomlin today, Mason Rudolph might be playing this game, but Mike Tomlin's like, we're winning this game. Like, he is adamant.
We believe in coming to play to win.
Right. Right. Exactly. And, if you're Cleveland, this is stepping stone. And this was germane to the text conversation I was having about, I just said, like, hey, I think this is sort of a character moment. Like, you've had these character moments all throughout the season. And this guy kind of said to me, like, you know, I think certain things have happened for a reason. You know, you learning all these different things about ourselves. And then now this is that game where you can apply some of these lessons, you know, from past games. Now they got to be healthy. Let's see who all's there. So
yeah, I know. They were missing their top four receivers last week due to COVID. So, I'm going to say this, though. I think you and I both appreciate the job those guys have done there building that thing. But I feel like finishing 10-6 and not making the playoffs is a setback. From where they were and like the way they lost to the Jets, man, that would really stink for those guys. That affects the way they will look back at this season.
You want to revert the fan base back to just absolute.
Oh, we're cursed. That's the way.
They'll sit there and go, we lost to the Jets. And then we lost to Pittsburgh with Mason Rudolph at quarterback. They'll revert immediately. Like, yeah, there will be the regression back to this is what happens to us. This is
same Lions lament. SOL. Yeah,
right.
SOB. Right. Same old Brown. Like, snap some people it. Will say that.
Snap
even
it.
If it's not.
Just snap it. Snap it.
All right.
You want to exceed what you were. You want to show if everybody shows, again, and I do think that's key, like, hey, if you don't have the rash of, hey, three offensive linemen not there, four wide receivers there, and yet you're throwing it a bazillion times, even though it's like practice squad guys getting targets, you know, you just got to go into this game. You got to snap it. Baker's got to do it. Myles Garrett's got to do it. This is what you paid him for, you know.
I'm sorry. You got to line up.
Give me three sacks.
You got to run the football with Chubb. You got to try to establish. This is a look. It's December in the AFC North. Okay, like I know you can throw on Pitt, but no. This is December in the AFC North. You know you're at home and you got one of Lee's best rushing attacks. That's what this is about. Line up, establish. Like I'm saying, you got to try to run the ball on these guys. That's what that division is about right here. Right. You don't abandon. You got to run, in my opinion. Show those guys what kind of day it's going to be.
Huge, huge moment, I think, for Cleveland's franchise here. I think a massive moment. Just to comment on the other games, Indy, Jacksonville, whatever. I'm sorry to Indy fans and Jacksonville fans, but I'm not focused on that game. The Tennessee-Houston game is, I'm very focused on that game just because I think of how badly Tennessee's offseason was and how much we're seeing that now. You go and sign a couple pass rushers, completely ineffective. Your draft class, some big problems with the draft class.
They need to go get a stud edge rusher. Like, they really need that badly.
I think they need an edge rusher. They might need a defensive coordinator to take a little bit off of Vrabel's plate. There's definitely some stuff there that they need defensively to remake a little bit of what that franchise does. But I think this is the cure-all, though. You got to win this game, do it in dominant fashion. If Derrick Henry can break the 2,000-yard mark, all of a sudden it regenerates a lot in that franchise that I feel like they really lost against the Packers.
If Derrick Henry does that against the Texans, J.J. Watt is going to see somebody in that locker room after that game. I would not want to be a teammate of J.J. Watt's after that, if that happens.
And by the way, like I will say this about J.J. Watt. It's been interesting because I talked about that speech that he made. Now we've all seen it. It's been everywhere. Yeah. You know, I really enjoyed where at one point he talked about fans buying a lot of I'm like all the marketing department's like, oh my God. Like,
what are you doing? Shut up.
let them buy the stuff, man. Don't say that. But I see a lot of people, you know, oh, JJ, the cameras come on. I've always been a guy who said JJ knows where the cameras are.
No, he does. He's a little bit.
Bit of an actor. He's a bit of all this stuff. But
that wasn't real.
Look, no. Well, not only does it not mean it wasn't real, whether that was real or not or whatever, if there was some drama, you know, it was JJ a little bit playing to it. Nothing he said in there was probably wrong. Okay? Like, was the message true or not? If the message was true, I really don't care how it came out. If it's true, it's true. And so if JJ, you know, look, if JJ wasn't going to say it, then I wanted to see Deshaun Watson say it. You know, somebody had to say something if that's a problem. So going to be interesting to see that game as well. I'm excited, man.
One more game, the AFC. I don't know if we need to touch on it because Buffalo's already clinched a playoff spot. But Miami, if they beat Buffalo and clinch a playoff berth for the first time since 2016, I think it's in Buffalo. We know how Miami typically does in Buffalo. I just, you know. Another test for Flo's team. I'll be watching that game a little bit. Then the NFC. We got three teams for two spots. Let's speed through this, okay? Rams, Bears, Cardinals. The Bears can return to the playoffs with a home win over Green Bay on Sunday, right? Meanwhile, Green Bay can nail down the number one seed, all right? And Aaron Rodgers, in the process, can finish the season with one of the top three single-season passer ratings in NFL history. Among qualified players. Charles, you tell me if that's something that will resonate with MVP voters, because it sure as hell feels like it.
Yeah, yeah. It's. I will tell you this. I really did not think 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, I would see Aaron Rodgers track down Pat Mahomes. He came around the stretch of the last corner.
He did.
And he tracked him down and this being tough, a game that really matters. I mean, it should matter to Rodgers. They want to get that number one seed. After seeing the number he put on Tennessee in really kind of limited opportunities, but he was like perfect in everything he did. This is a game where I think he goes out and he stamps it. Like, to me, it will matter to me as an MVP voter. If he goes out and stamps it, shows out like he has in like every single game except for one Tampa game.
I think he wants it, dude. Yeah. He's admitted it.
He does want it.
If he finishes close to 55, like 50 touchdowns, because like we know the Chiefs are playing the Chargers, you know, they might not play everybody the whole game, you know. But if Aaron Rodgers throws four touchdowns and he's at 48 touchdowns and he's got fewer interceptions and, you know, his team finishes 13-3 or whatever, that's tough. By the way, Can you take a guess at the other three quarterbacks who finished with a higher single season passer rating in NFL history than Rodgers currently has right now? Guarantee you won't get one, but you might get the other two, just for fun.
Brady?
Nope.
Really?
One of his rivals, though.
Peyton Manning?
Yep.
Okay. Steve Young?
I'll kind of set you up. The other guy's Rodgers in 2011, his best season. Okay. So, like, you never would have guessed that, would you? Right.
Trick
so,
question. You can give me this trick question.
That was bogus. So, but Manning and Rodgers and the other guy, Nick Foles.
What?
Do you believe that? Yes. The 2013 Nick Foles season. The 27-2 touchdown and interception ratio season. Swear, I'm dead serious. It's real. So definitely a game to watch there. And one last one. This one's important, Charles. Arizona at the Los Angeles Rams. No Jared Goff due a broken thumb. Cooper Kupp's on COVID IR right now. And the winning team will make the playoffs. I actually think this one's more important. Like, no matter what, we're going to look at the 2020 Cardinals and be like, those dudes took a step forward this year. Kyler got banged up. They kind of tailed off. But, like, that's a team I think we're all going to pick to win 9-10 games next year. I feel like if the Rams lose this game, now we're talking about those guys descending a little bit from where they were a couple years ago, the continuing of a descent. And I think it feeds more into what we've been talking about, and I don't know if we need to spend a whole lot of time on it, about, hey, how do they get out of this? I don't think McVay's the problem. Like, I think it's a ridiculous, it's not McVay. It's the quarterback. And it'd also be a shame, too, because this is another defense that's been fun to watch this year. Like, Brandon Staley's done a good job with those guys. So I actually feel like this one at home means a lot. Maybe not a lot, but it does mean more to the Rams because, you know, there's going to be more criticism of those guys if they fail to make the playoffs after the way they started.
I think this is fundamentally important for the Rams because now you've already lost Jared Goff. I think if you win this game, and I don't think Goff's going to be back for the playoffs. I know he said he thinks he can be back for the playoffs, you know, from the broken thumb. I doubt that's going to be the case. But I still think if you're the Rams, you lose this game, you don't make the playoffs, then it ensures the offseason becomes the Jared Goff talk, right? Like, that's what it's going to be. Now, if you win this game, you make it to the playoffs, maybe Goff comes back. Even if he doesn't, it still changes the tenor a little bit of how you enter the offseason. But, man, if they lose this game and they're out and you know, Goff had that broken thumb's not there for it, how long is it before fans go, the Todd Gurley deal, the Jared Goff deal, the Brandon Cooks deal? They start to look at all these deals where they just blew out salaries and now there's just multiple ones that look like a huge mistake. They got to dig out of this situation right now, and it's not great.
I like the fact you brought that up because you're right, because guess what? There's no, like, help coming in the first round of the draft. They don't have their pick. So, like, because of the Jalen Ramsey deal. There's also one more thing here that really concerns me about the way Goff has looked this year, right? So, like, 2013 touchdown interception ratio, right? The Rams have the league's second best rushing offense in terms of DVOA. Like, that's not good enough. I'm sorry. That's not – when they're running the ball like that, I know they've had issues in past. They miss Andrew Whitworth, okay? But, like, when you're running the football like that – this stuff should be working more. So I believe Sean McVay is a great coach. So there's only one other place to really look. And I think if you're the Rams, again, I said it, I think they got to start working on hedging their bets. I do.
We'll see. It's going to be an interesting game. That's for sure. I'm excited, man. Week 17 is.
I hope you guys can tell we're fired up. We're ready to roll.
Yes, I think. I feel like the NFL's product always proves itself at the end of a year because we're always excited about all these different play-in games and all of it. Like, it matters for so many teams and there's so much on the line. People wonder why there's big ratings for the NFL every year. It's just because the drama is always there nonstop.
All right. If you guys listen to us, I'm sure you might be interested in some other podcasts in the Yahoo Sports podcast family. So check out the Yahoo Sports College podcast because it's bowl season. Check out Post It Up with Chris Haynes because it's NBA season. You can follow me on Twitter at Therese Paler. You can follow Charles on Twitter at Charles Robinson. Give our ace producer, Brett Rader, a follow as well. And Charles, tell them what else they need to know.
please rate and review us. We appreciate it. You guys helped us out this year. It's been awesome. We got a 5-star review on iTunes. Please help us continue to add to that. That means a lot to us. And please join me in congratulating Therese Paylor, who won the Super League this week in his third season. Therese, congratulations. It's a brutal season. Your mid-season pickup of Miles Gaskin paid off. And way to go, man. It's a feather in your cap.
Oh, it definitely is a feather in my cap because of how hard it is. And I will take 1 minute to celebrate with another clip from a film that I greatly enjoyed.
The champ is here! Ladies and gentlemen, the heavyweight champion of the world has arrived! The champ is here!
I will take it. All right. I will also just humbly say I needed a lot of breaks because I was looking at the statistics, and Brett's going to choke me out, but I was looking at the stats for this season. I had Kyler Murray, and that was important. But between the running backs, receivers, tight ends, I didn't have one guy in the top 25, not one. So I needed a confluence of breaks, which is not unlike football. I would gladly take it, and I'm looking forward to trying to defend the title next year. Thank you for joining us. We had a great time today. Looking forward to reviewing the Week 17 slate. We will see you on Sunday night for the freestyle. All right. Have a happy new year, everybody. We appreciate you guys. Peace.